So the fear that they had of losing their father's love pushed them to first kill Yusuf. But then one of the brothers says, no, let's not go that extreme. Let's just throw him in the well. So you can see that hasad itself will cause a lot of misery for other people. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program for humanity. So we said hasad is a problem. So one of the causes is fear that we have that we might lose something or someone might beat us to it. So what we do is we have jealousy in ourselves and our hearts and then we manifest it into the outside. So we have to be very careful that when we have other people and we have competitors on the outside, we have to be very aware not to cross the red lines and the limits of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah says, تِلْكَ حَدُودُ اللَّهِ. These are the limits of Allah. فَلَا تَتَعَدَّوْهَا. Do not cross it. Another reason is pride, takabbur. And this pride notion began with Iblis and continued. So Iblis, or Shaitan, Satan's main problem was jealousy and pride. Now, when it comes to us as well, sometimes we have too much pride in ourselves. So we expect people to be below us. We expect people to follow us. We expect people to, treat us differently. And when we see someone being treated nicely and with honor, that makes me jealous of them. I should be the one who's respected, not him. So you see that we have issues and problems. Now Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he says in the Quran, وَقَالُوا لَوْلَا نُزِّلَ هَذَا الْقُرْآنَ عَلَى رَجُلٍ مِنَ الْقَرْيَتَيْنِ عَظِيمٍ. Now, obviously, when Allah revealed the Quran, they were very jealous of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They said, why would Allah reveal the Quran to a man who's poor, who's orphan, he has nothing? Allah should have revealed to a person who's of a great power, a person of a great status, a person who's very well known, and so on and so forth. So this was their expectation because of their pride. They could not accept the fact that Allah couldn't reveal His Quran or His religion to a person who does not have these things or a person who does not have any status in their measurement. So that's a problem. That sometimes when we have pride, our pride leads us to doing jealousy and hasad towards other people. One more and we will end with this. And the ta'ajjub, right? We have also a sense of ujub in ourselves. We take too much pride in ourselves. And, you know, say, who are you compared to me? For example, it says, ma antum illa basharan mithluna. When Allah sends a messenger, it's like, who are you? You're just human beings like us. فَقَالُوا أَنُؤْمِنْ لِبَشَرًا مِثْلُنَا. Do you want us to believe in a human being just like us? So they had this ujub in their nafs. They had this pride in themselves. Then why would I listen to them? وَلَئِنْ أَطَعْتُمْ بَشَرًا مِثْلَكُمْ إِنَّكُمْ إِذًا لَخَاسِرُونَ. And if you are obedient to a human being like you, then surely you are at loss. That was their ideology because they had so much pride in themselves and ujub in themselves. They said, well, you know, Allah should send us angels, not human beings like us. So if we have that ourselves, we have to be very, very careful. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa alihi.
In the limelight.
Demonstrators took to the streets of New York City on Friday night, 27th of January, resulting in 3 arrests following the release of body camera video depicting Memphis police officers beating Ty Nichols, a 29-year-old African-American. Protesters were mostly peaceful, but emotions ran high. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The New York Post has covered this story and tells us more. Protests over the police beating to death of Ty Nichols turned violent in Times Square on Friday night, 27th of January, New York City, as several arrests were made, including of a man who stomped on the windshield of a New York Police Department cruiser. At least 3 people were handcuffed in the crossroads of the world after getting into some sort of confrontation with police officers in the street. In another chaotic scene, one of the protesters hopped on the hood of a police car and cracked the windshield with his foot. Several police officers quickly moved in to grab the man, and then they led him through the crowd into a police precinct, video footage shows. The Times Square protest was one of several that erupted in New York City as the sun went down. Others originated in Union Square and Grand Central Terminal. While the night began peacefully, tensions between protesters and the New York City Police Department police officers grew as it got later into the night. Earlier that evening, Black Lives Matter leader Hawk Newsom warned at Union Square that violence wasn't off the table. Was they peaceful when they were stomping on Brother Nichols's head, when they was hitting him with a baton? Newsom told a crowd of dozens of people. Was they peaceful with Rodney King? Was they peaceful with George Floyd, with Eric Garner? But they want us to always be peaceful, the activist went on to say. I'm not telling you to come out here and wild out, but we ain't never taking violence off the table, because that's the language of America. Newsom later added, I can't stand seeing another black man screaming, I can't stomach it, in reference to the graphic video footage released by officials in Memphis, Tennessee, of Ty Nichols' violent confrontation with 5 Memphis police officers. Footage posted online from Times Square showed police arresting a man after he got into the face of police officers earlier in the evening. It is unclear if the man was connected to any protests. Throngs of marchers were seen walking as they chanted, "No justice, no peace," and "No racist police," with a few protesters holding up a sign that said, "Stop the war on Black America." Around 10 p.m., local time, New York Police Department officers blocked some protesters from potentially reaching the West Side Highway. CBS New York reporter Ali Bauman tweeted with a photograph. At some point, the protesters from Union Square linked up with demonstrators who started out the night at New York City's Times Square. Earlier in the evening, another small protest began inside Grand Central Terminal, according to video footage posted on Twitter shortly before 6 p.m. Demonstrators there were calling for the closure of Rikers Island as they held signs commemorating Ty Nichols and other black men who died following confrontations with police. Only revolution can bring justice, part of one sign read. Access to Grand Central Terminal was later limited to only customers looking to catch a train out of the city as a result of the flurry of demonstrations. Police were checking tickets as people walked through entrances. Tyre Nichols died earlier this month after he was pulled over by police, and the five cops involved in the traffic stop were charged with murder on Thursday. The 29-year-old black man's death has sparked condemnation from leaders across America as they urge peaceful demonstration following release of the graphic video footage that shows Tyre Nichols pummeled and tased by police officers who are all black. New York was one of several cities across the United States where protests were underway. CBS News has also covered the story and tells us more. Protesters took to the streets across New York City on Friday night, 27th of January, following the release of body cam video showing the brutal beating of Tyre Nichols by police officers. Officials in Memphis, Tennessee, on Friday released four videos from police body cameras and street surveillance cameras of the 7th of January incident. In the video, Tyre Nichols, a 29-year-old black man, could be heard screaming for his mother while being beaten by police officers. He died just 3 days later. Five police officers were fired and charged with second-degree murder. Following the release of the video, officials announced two Shelby County deputies had been relieved of their duties. After nearly 4 hours of protest, the crowd dispersed around 10:30 p.m., with rally leaders telling the crowd to call it a night and stay safe. People came out in droves on Friday night, 27th of January, angry over the death of Tyre Nichols. But more so than angry, the mood of the crowd on Friday night felt dejected that something like this happened again. From Times Square to Union Square, hundreds of people marched through Manhattan after the Memphis body cam video was released. The night stayed mostly peaceful with the exception of someone jumping on a police squad car in Times Square, New York City. At least three people were arrested. Some people watched the body cam videos on their phones during the rallies, but other people told us they have no intention of watching it because they feel they already know the gruesome tragedy it will show. If it wasn't for the George Floyd uprising, this justice here wouldn't be so swift. But we can't let up. Why can't we let up? Because we're still being murdered, said Hawk Newsom with Black Lives Matter Greater New York. Like we can fight all we want, and currently it feels like it's never enough, but obviously it's important to still be out here. And you can arrest the officer all you want, but that doesn't bring Tyre Nichols back. He's still dead, his family is still mourning. They just released a really graphic and awful video. How do people expect that to be justice of some sort? Harlem resident Hennessy Garcia said. Like I always keep asking myself, when is this going to end? Literally, when is it going to end? Bronx resident Chris Campbell said. Well, it just seems that only the black ones got fired and arrested, and almost every white cop that's ever done anything barely gets arrested. So I don't think that's justice in any way whatsoever. Abolishing and changing the entire system, that's what justice is. That's what changes, one protester said. I feel there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of anger, and rightfully so. I think here in New York, we should also try to figure out how we can be better in these conversations as well, public advocate Jemana Williams said. The protest was mostly peaceful, but as the crowd was coming up the 7th Avenue and got to 44th Street, one individual was seen climbing on top of a police car and stomping on the windshield. When that happened, police officers quickly moved in and pulled that individual off the police cruiser. That's when others started to get into the action. Police officers were seen removing at least five people from the crowd. Officers were able to get the situation under control quickly before things became peaceful again.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Salamun alaikum. You are listening to Lantern, and we have a new story. The title of the story is The Lion, the Ass, and the Fox are the three personalities in our today's story. A lion, an ass, and a fox were hunting in company and caught a large quantity of game. The ass was asked to divide the spoil. This he did very fairly, giving each an equal share. The fox was well satisfied, but the lion flew into a great rage over it. And with one stroke of his huge paw, he added the ass to the pile of slain. Then he turned to the fox. "You divide it," he roared angrily. The fox wasted no time to talking. He quickly piled all the game into one great heap. From this, he took a very small portion for himself, such undesirable bite as the horns and hoofs of a mountain goat and the end of an ox tail. The lion now recovered his good humor entirely. "Who taught you to divide so fairly?" he asked pleasantly. "I learned a lesson from the ass," replied the fox, carefully edging away. Learn from the misfortunes of others.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. This is Vita at your service. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Lantern. A new story, a new perspective, a new day, a new life. Thank you for listening to us. Let's go through the beautiful story of today, which I'm really interested in because in my own personal life, I have a special mindset that I'm really rebellious about experience. I mean, using the experience of other people. There are always people before us and maybe after us who will go through an experience which may be useful for our lives. The thing I want to tell you is that you shouldn't think that way, that okay, we have to experience everything by ourselves. Sometimes you have to stop this mindset, think, learn, and believe that maybe other people's experience may be helpful too. But, you know, it's not always that easy, in my opinion. But sometimes you have to consider the cost of not going through another people's experience. For example, in the story of the tiny smart fox of today, we saw that the cost of experiencing a new thing was really high, that the fox decided to actually choose the experience of another animal. This is the same about our own life too. You know, when we are children, we learn and fail all the time. We fall off bikes, I don't know, we may get hurt and, I don't know, do something incorrectly, tell someone what we shouldn't tell them, and so on. But that's just what kids do. As adults, we tend to move into areas of core competency. You know, human being finds the right way to face future events and doesn't fall into error in similar cases in compared to the past experiences. So, it doesn't mean that you are weak if you are using other people's experience. Sometimes, because I don't know it is about prejudice, pride, or whatever it is, we feel like we cannot use other people's experiences because we are weak. No, it's not a weakness. It's a power. It's a power to know that you don't have a lot of time in this world. Your time is limited, so you have to use it wisely. And this wisdom comes from using other people's experiences.
The lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
And sometimes you have to understand that these experiences are not materialistic only, and they don't have materialistic benefits, but also they have spiritual benefits too. As I told you, this life is considered as a big test for us. You know, you have to pass this test. And you cannot cheat on that, because everybody's question is different. There was a beautiful story once that, I don't know, every student wanted to cheat on the exam and they wrote the other people's answer. But they didn't pay attention to the point that the questions are different. This is exactly as we live in this world. Everybody has his own story. And for finding the best way of the ending of your story or the opening of the new chapter of your life, you have to know that you shouldn't experience anything by yourself. And actually, I need someone to tell myself this, because I'm that sort of person who just think like, okay, I have to go through this experience because I need it. If you did it, it was for yourself. I cannot use yours. And this is completely wrong. I have to admit that I may be rebellious in these sort of things myself. But I think I had some dark experience because of this behavior too. So that was a really simple story, maybe somehow a bit of cliche, but this cliche is life. Let me tell you something really interesting about cliche. Unfortunately, we think cliches are something that, I don't know, we have to ignore, or we have to, I don't know, be like, oh, it's cliche, it's not that much important. We don't need to listen to that. But cliches are some correct facts, which we ignore because we know they are correct. And this is the nature of human being. We wanna, I don't know, prove to ourselves, prove to the nature, prove to family, relatives, other people that we are strong. But sometimes the definition of this strength that we use is so wrong that will make us go through a dramatic change or a huge problem in our own life. So don't forget to read books, and don't forget that this experience that is written here in that book by 1,000 years is so much more than what you can go through in your limited time in this life. Don't be rebellious. Sometimes you have to stop, reflect, and think, and choose the best way. Thank you for listening to this episode. It was all the time we had for today. I bid you farewell.
Thank you.
that was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The divisions that are dragging the U.S. down in all aspects are already something that the whole world can see. It is the key cause of political paralysis, economic chaos, a lack of confidence in the established system, and the exacerbation of many existing social problems in the U.S. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times had an eye on this issue, writing, "The Economist magazine recently published an article entitled America's Culture Wars Extend into Medicine. By culture wars, the magazine points its arrows at U.S. political infighting. The article acknowledges that when struggling with imperfect decision-making between scientists and politicians amid the COVID-19 pandemic worldwide, most countries got through without seriously harming science's reputation, yet the U.S. did not. The Economist magazine said, no institution had a steeper fall in public confidence in 2021 than the medical establishment, according to Gallup. In 2022, this downward trend continued. It later explains that political stances boil down to social identity and virtue signaling, pledging allegiance to the correct answers on the masking mandates and care has become a badge of identity for firebrands in both parties. The divisions that are dragging the U.S. down in all aspects are already something that the whole world would see. It is the key cause of political paralysis, economic chaos, a lack of confidence in the established system, and the exacerbation of many existing social problems in the U.S. Now it has spread to the medical community, explaining precisely why the U.S., which holds the cutting edge of medical development and resources, has instead become the biggest epicenter of the pandemic. This is the Economist's concern about the status and strength of the U.S.-led Western world, as well as a reminder to the rest of the world that the U.S. inability to fight against the epidemic is a lesson and warning against politicizing and weaponizing the epidemic, rather than treating it scientifically and factually. The result is not difficult to imagine. After all, viruses will not talk about politics with you.
In the face of a new virus, the available resources do not match the challenges faced, and this is the case all over the world. Under such circumstances, that one group of politicians say this while another group say the opposite doesn't help address the challenges. However, this kind of political game is exactly what American politicians have repeatedly done in the past 3 years, turning the virus into a weapon of partisanship. But what are America's culture wars? To put it bluntly, it is the elevation part of the scientific debate to a partisan one. For example, the vaccine issue, whether it has side effects or not, is a scientific issue, not a political one. The U.S. should encourage the public to get vaccinated and gradually improve the vaccine and reduce its side effects as much as possible. But what have U.S. politicians done in this regard? They're willing to attend seminars about the side effects of vaccines, deliver their manner of respecting science, and then oppose vaccinations. They essentially aim to enhance their political standing and strengthen their electoral advantage, not to fight against the COVID-19. On the other hand, other countries' achievements over the past 3 years are evident, and the U.S. is not qualified to point an accusing finger to other countries. Some believe that, for example, if China took Washington's reckless approach, an estimated 4.8 million people would die. China's policies dealing with COVID-19 have actually saved millions of lives. Global Times added, in contrast, China's science-based epidemic fight approach is fundamentally different from the Western politicized approach of lying flat. China's prevention and control measures have been the result of respect for science and professionalism instead of being manipulated by politicians for their personal ends, no matter at which stage. This is one of the key factors that have enabled the country to win the battle against the virus. This can explain why other countries, especially Asian countries, have been much less hit by the coronavirus pandemic. And in the future, these countries will not experience the chaos of infighting over the pandemic like the US and other Western countries. These countries' vision is to get out of the pandemic while Washington is still infighting over this virus. Recently, some netizens said that China should not be compared with the U.S., whose work is dealing with the pandemic is among the worst across the world. This is a sign of awakening. Some people have realized that the U.S. has done a poor job. Washington can no longer fool China or other countries, let alone blame China for the pandemic.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, you're welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, we are social beings. We live in the society. We need to have interaction with each other. We need to have give and take relationship with each other. And we need to build trust and confidence in society in order to lead or to live a happy life and a better life. Without trust, we cannot achieve comfort. Without trust, without positive thinking, and without a pessimistic view, we are not going to have peace of mind, we are not going to have tranquility, and we are not going to have comfort. Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam said, trust is a comfort to the heart and security in faith. Now, in fact, trust also releases the pressure created by the miseries and misfortunes of life. In our daily life, in our day-to-day life, we encounter a lot of difficulties and hardships in our life as a result of the incidents or the catastrophes that take place. So mishaps are there everywhere. We have difficult lives. And the difficulties of life and the pressures that we suffer will be reduced to a large extent by having trust. Trust in God and trust in our friends and the people around us. Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam says in his Ghurar al-Hakam, trust reduces depression. Now, depression is due to a lack of trust and confidence. Because of a lack of trust, we begin to experience depression, frustration, hopelessness, disappointment. And all these are as a lack of trust. Trust also means, you know, consigning your matters to God, to Allah, the Almighty. You know, when something happens, you should trust Allah. You should consign your matters to Allah. And that's when you will feel less depression. You will feel less disappointed and less desperate. There is not a thing that makes life more beautiful in our eyes, reduces our sufferings, and paves the way for success like optimism and trust do. Therefore, we need to be careful of painful thoughts. We need to be careful of hurtful thoughts, such as pessimism. Just as you are cautious of illnesses, you also need to be cautious of your thoughts. We need to open our minds to optimistic thinking. We need to understand how easily we can rescue ourselves from intrusive thoughts. You know, these intrusive thoughts keep hurting us. They are coming again and again, and we need to ignore those thoughts. We need to replace them with positive thinking, with optimistic thinking. Pessimism destroys our well-being, our spiritual and our mental well-being. It makes our life restless, and it makes our life full of trouble and full of uneasiness, full of apprehension, full of anxiety. So we should not pay heed and pay attention to such painful thoughts. We need to replace them with positive thinking. It is essential for Muslims to behave with each other in such a way that does not leave room for ill expectations. Let's have a break. We will be back.
We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, you know, used to advise Muslims to think positively about each other and not to act in a manner that would make others mistrust them. And he recommended the people to avoid places of suspicions, to avoid going to places where they are suspected of doing something wrong. You know, in his Nahj al-Balagha, in his short maxims or in his short sayings, saying number 341, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam says, "Man dakhala madakhil as-su'i uttuhim." Now, It means that a person who enters in places where he is suspected, then he is accused of doing something wrong. For example, if a Muslim goes to a bar where, okay, people usually go to drink wine, to drink alcoholic beverages, then obviously a Muslim person who even does not drink and who goes to such places, he will be suspected of drinking. While in fact he may not be doing this, but it's better, according to Imam Ali, it's better to avoid going to such places, even if one has an essential thing to do. So, madakhil as-su is bad. It's important that one should avoid going to such places. And Imam Ali has been quoted as saying, "He who holds hope in you has given you his trust. Therefore, do not disappoint him." Now, this means that when someone trusts you, you should not betray him. You should not disappoint him. You should fulfill his hope. And brothers and sisters, there are many, many sayings and many important traditions that have been reported from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and from the infallible imams about su'udhan, about suspicion, about pessimism, as well as about optimism. Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam has been reported to have said, "La yaglibanna alayka su'udhan fa innahu la yada'u baynaka wa bayna khalilin sulha." You know, suspicion, according to this hadith, as I would like to translate it, but my translation is a rough translation of the hadith, "La yaglibanna alayka su'udhan." Su'udhan should not overwhelm you, because if it overwhelms you, "La yada'u baynaka wa bayna khalilin sulha," it will not leave any room for any sulh, for any peace, or for any trust between you and your friend. Yes, if there is suspicion in your life, you will not be able to continue your friendship. There will be no room for any trust between you and your friend. That is for sure. And also there is a saying from Imam Ridha alayhi salatu wasalam, the 8th Shia Imam. He says, "A'lam anna al-jubna wal-bukhla wal-harsa gharizatun yajma'uha su'udhan." Verily, you should know that su'udhan is the source of cowardice, greediness, and stinginess. You know, when you are suspicious of your brothers, then you will have no room for generosity. There will be no room for interaction with your brothers in faith. You will not trust them. And also there is a saying from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, who says, "La deena li musi'idhan." There is no religion for a person who suspects other people, for a person who is pessimistic towards other people. So, brothers and sisters, I would like to conclude that suspicion and pessimism towards other people will destroy trust and confidence. It will destroy peace of mind, and it will destroy comfort, tranquility, love, and everything. There will be no room left for any interaction, any trust. While we need trust in our life, we are social beings, we need trust one another, and we need to assume that our brothers in faith are doing good, and that they do not do with their actions, they do not mean to hurt us, to cause any harm. We need to trust others, otherwise we will not live a life of comfort and a life full of tranquility and peace of mind. That is the end of this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share he knows.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes. Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
In an article published on Responsible Statecraft, it is said that the U.S. role in Ukraine has slowly escalated since the beginning of the war there almost a year ago, saying the question now is how far Washington is willing to go. When the U.S. involves itself in a conflict, it often finds it difficult to get itself out. For instance, it happened in Vietnam. The U.S. military advisors helping the South Vietnamese fight Viet Cong forces eventually became U.S. soldiers fighting an American war. Or in Afghanistan, an initial invasion under the pretext of fighting Al-Qaeda terrorists morphed into 2 decades of war and destruction that resulted in the death of hundreds of thousands of Afghans. The same scenario could be unfolding in Ukraine. Less than a month into the Ukraine war, the US President Joe Biden stated that the US and NATO allies would not fight Russia in Ukraine. However, little by little, Washington and NATO are creeping closer to the catastrophic scenario Biden had described as World War III. Biden had also claimed the U.S. troops will not be sent to Ukraine to take part in the conflict. However, several current and former American intelligence officials told The Intercept back in October that there is a much larger presence of both CIA and U.S. special operations personnel in Ukraine than there was when the war began, saying they are conducting clandestine American operations in the country that are now far more extensive. An 8-year Army Special Operations veteran, who is now an investigative journalist, reported in December that among those covert operations is the CIA's work with an unnamed NATO allies spy agency to carry out sabotage operations within Russia. Reportedly, the cause of the unexplained explosions that have rocked Russian infrastructure throughout the war. Meanwhile, the United States and its NATO allies have serially blown past their own self-imposed lines over arms transfers. At the start of the war, analysts cautioned that the overt supply of even small arms and light weaponry risks encouraging a wider war and possible retaliation from Moscow, while U.S. officials ruled out more advanced weaponry as too escalatory. It took less than 2 months for the Biden administration to start sending these more risky tranches of high-powered arms. By the end of May, it was sending advanced rocket systems. In addition, NATO arms transfers have now escalated well beyond what governments had worried just months ago could draw the alliance into direct war with Russia, with the US and European governments now sending armored vehicles and planning to send tanks. Russia has warned the United States against its planned delivery of Abrams tanks to Ukraine. Anatoly Antonov, Russia's ambassador to the United States, has described the move as a blatant provocation against Moscow. He accused Washington of purposefully trying to inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. The warning came before the U.S. announced the delivery of dozens of its main battle tanks to Ukraine. Two American officials have been quoted as saying that the timeline of any potential delivery remains unclear and could take months or even years. Washington has said previously that providing Abrams tanks to Ukraine is not feasible, citing difficulties in training and maintenance. Meanwhile, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has decided to send Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine and to allow other countries such as Poland to send the same tanks from their own stockpiles to Kyiv. Until now, Berlin had been hesitant to send the Leopards or to allow other nations that have them in their possession to transfer them to Kyiv, with reports early last week saying that Germany would agree to do so only if the US provided its own tanks. The decision by the U.S. to send its Abrams seems to have provided the political cover that Berlin had been seeking. Ukrainian officials have said the tanks would be a game-changer on the battlefield. The country's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has called for a large number of tanks to repel Russian attacks.
Today, by the way, there's a lot of talk about tanks, about modern tanks that we need, and about the way this shortfall can be filled. A lot of efforts, words, promises. But it is important not to lose sight of reality. It is not about 5 or 10 or 15 tanks. The need is larger.
Zelensky said that Ukraine's allies have the required number of tanks to strengthen the country's defense against Russia. Since the beginning of the war, Ukraine's allies have sent Kyiv tens of billions of dollars worth of weapons. Western countries have also imposed a slew of economic sanctions on Moscow. Now, by escalating their support for Ukraine's military, the US and NATO have created an incentive structure for Moscow to take a drastic, aggressive step to show the seriousness of its own red lines.
The confrontation between Russia and the West is getting more complicated after Germany and the United States announced their decisions to send advanced tanks to Kyiv. The U.S. is sending 31 Abrams battle tanks to Ukraine. Biden told reporters at the White House that the tanks highlight America's enduring commitment to Ukraine.
Today, I'm announcing that the United States will be sending 31 Abrams tanks to Ukraine, the equivalent of one Ukrainian battalion. Secretary Austin has recommended this step because it will enhance the Ukraine's capacity to defend its territory and achieve its strategic objectives. The Abrams tanks are the most capable tanks in the world. They're also extremely complex to operate and maintain. So we're also giving Ukraine the parts and equipment necessary to effectively sustain these tanks on the battlefield.
The reversal of the U.S.'s previous position came after Germany said it will send 14 of its Leopard 2 tanks to Ukraine. Berlin has also given permission to partner countries to re-export other battle tanks to Kyiv. Biden has praised the decision by Germany and stressed on what he called Western unity against Russia. Germany was reluctant to send tanks to Ukraine and was waiting for the U.S. to take the front lead. Britain had earlier announced that it would give Ukraine its Challenger tanks. While Berlin was concerned about escalating the war, Washington cited logistical and maintenance challenges. Western nations had so far refused to give heavy armored vehicles to Ukraine. Kyiv is now pushing its Western allies to deliver fourth-generation fighter jets, such as the American F-16. But the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz says there is no chance of any fighter jets being sent to Ukraine, despite renewed calls for high-end aircraft. Ukraine's Air Force has a fleet of aging Soviet-era fighter jets. Western military support has been vital for Kyiv.
I follow the debate closely surrounding these tanks. You know, you do have a number of German officials and experts, commentators saying we can't have German tanks, you know, on the border with Russia again. This evokes terrible memories of World War II. But the counter argument to this is because you hear a lot about Russia, is if you look at how Nazi Germany invaded the Soviet Union, it invaded it through Ukraine and Belarus. So Germany also has a historic responsibility.
By announcing its decision to send Leopard tanks to Ukraine, Germany is now actively involved in the war with Russia. The German foreign minister has said that Germany and its allies are, quote, fighting a war against Russia. The comments have been described as rare and frank remarks about the Western role in the conflict. Sergei Nechayev, Russia's ambassador to Germany, said this extremely dangerous decision takes the conflict to a new level of confrontation and contradicts the statements of German politicians about Germany's unwillingness to get involved in it. Russia has harshly criticized the decision by NATO members to send heavy weaponry to Ukraine as a blatant provocation. The Kremlin has said that any Abrams battle tanks supplied to Ukraine by the U.S. would, quote, burn. Russian officials have dismissed the expected delivery as an expensive folly. The U.S. Defense Department announced in early January 2023 that it would give an additional $3.1 billion in military aid to Ukraine. In total, the U.S. approved about $50 billion in aid for Ukraine in 2022. About half of that money, or $24.9 billion, went towards military spending. The U.S. also gave $9.6 billion to Ukraine for what it has described as non-military purposes in 2022. It is believed that the small number of Western-supplied tanks manned by poorly trained crews and lacking maintenance and supply infrastructure support is likely to yield negative results. Furthermore, the first deployment of U.S. main battle tanks in Ukraine must come by a significant Ukrainian army success. That would require no fewer than 200 to 300 tanks. The question is whether Western countries are prepared to go for a full-blown confrontation with Russia.
the two biggest economies in South America are starting talks to create a common currency. Brazil's president, Luiz Inácio da Silva, and Argentina's president, Alberto Fernández, wrote in a joint piece published in Argentinian paper Perfil that they wanted to foster greater integration between the two neighbors. The pair said they had decided to move forward with discussions about a common South American currency that could be used for financial and commercial flows, reducing operating costs and other external vulnerability.
What we're trying to work on right now is to have our finance ministers, each with their economy teams and with a lot of debate and meetings, flow the foreign trade and transaction between the two countries with a common currency.
The announcement came as Lula has visited Argentina for his first trip abroad since taking office at the start of the month. At a press conference in Buenos Aires, he said establishing a common currency for trade would reduce reliance on the U.S. dollar, whose sharp ascent last year was painful for countries around the world. Lula said, "If it depended on me, we would have external commerce always in the same currency of the other countries, so we wouldn't have to depend on the dollar." The Financial Times had previously reported, citing Argentina's economy minister, Sergio Massa, that the neighboring nations would announce this week they were starting work on a common currency. Massa indicated that though initially a bilateral project, the initiative would be offered to other nations in Latin America, adding it's Argentina and Brazil inviting the rest of the region. Argentina and Brazil are both part of the Mercosur trade bloc, which also includes Paraguay and Uruguay. Talk of creating a common currency has periodically cropped up since its founding in 1991. Brazil is Argentina's largest trade partner. It's the top destination for Argentine exports, amounting to 14.3% and $12.7 billion in 2022. Close to 20% of Argentina's imports are from Brazil, worth just over $16 billion last year. Emerging markets have also been hit hard by the strong U.S. dollar, drawing complaints about its dominance in the global financial system. The greenback rallied nearly 8% against a basket of major currencies in 2022, making imports of food and energy more expensive. Over 24 countries have been the target of unilateral or partial trade sanctions for not adhering to the policies of the U.S. and other Western powers. These limitations, nevertheless, have turned out to be detrimental to the economies of the group of seven nations and have begun to impact the U.S. dollar's hegemony in the world. The International Monetary Fund recorded a decline in central bank holdings of U.S. dollar reserves during the fourth quarter of 2020, which went from 71% to 59%, reflecting the U.S. dollar's waning influence on the world economy. And it continues to worsen. Evidence of this can be seen in the fact that the banking holdings of dollar claims have decreased from $7 trillion in 2021 to $6.4 trillion at the end of March 2022. According to an IMF report, the percentage of U.S. dollars in central bank reserves has decreased by 12% since 1999. While the percentage of other currencies, particularly the Chinese yuan, have shown an increasing trend with a 9% rise during this period. For instance, to boost global commerce and Indian exports, the Reserve Bank of India devised in July last year a rupee settlement mechanism to fend off pressure on the Indian currency. India has recently concluded agreements for currency exchanges of $75.4 billion with the UAE, Japan, and various South Asian nations. New Delhi has also informed South Korea and Turkey of its non-dollar mediated exchange rates for each country's currency. Currently, Turkey conducts business utilizing the national currency of China, yuan, and Russia, ruble. Iran has also proposed to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization euro-like SCO currency for trade among the Eurasian bloc to stop the weaponization of the U.S. dollar-dominated global financial system. Moscow and Beijing have already set up a cross-border interbank payment network similar to SWIFT, increased their gold purchases to give their currencies more stability, and signed agreements to swap national currencies in several regional and bilateral deals. The trend towards de-dollarization in international trade particularly among the BRICS nations, has gained significant momentum in recent years. Together, they represent 41% of the world's population, 24% of its GDP,